casa. Thank you for sending Clarissa. Yeah, I need to see it too.
Good morning, it's 9:12. I'm calling the meeting to order. So apologize for the lateness. We have Jenny, Marie, Daniel, and myself. Kirby was telecommuting, but we're trying to call him in. He's not answering really this point, so we're gonna move forward. Looking for a motion to adopt the agenda as is.
So moved.
Motion made by Jenny.
Second.
Seconded by Daniel. Questions or comments? I see none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, abstention, motion carries. Looking for a motion to approve the March 2nd, 2022 LOC meeting minutes and forward to the business committee.
So moved.
Motion made by Jenny.
Second.
Seconded by Daniel. Questions or comments? If none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, abstention, motion carries. Moving on to current business, budget management and control law amendments. Clarissa.
This item starts on page 3 of your packet. The budget management control law sets forth the requirements to be followed by the Oneida Business Committee and the Oneida Fund Units when preparing the budget to be presented to the General Tribal Council for approval and to establish a triennial strategy planning process for the nation's budget. On November 24th, 2020, the Business Committee adopted emergency amendments to the law in response to the COVID-19 pandemic to provide that in the event that the nation proclaims an emergency in accordance with the Emergency Management Law, which prevents the presentation and adoption of the budget by the General Tribal Council, the Business Committee shall adopt the nation's budget. So these emergency amendments were set to expire on May 24th, 2021. On April 28th, 2021, the Business Committee adopted a motion to direct the LOC to have emergency amendments to the Budget Management Control Law to remove much of the budget process and deadlines and leave it simply as a budget should be adopted by September 30th, 2021, and to direct the LOC to continue working with finance to get the Budget Management Control Law amended. So the Budget Management Control Law was already on the LOC's active files list for the development of comprehensive amendments. Additional emergency amendments to the law were then sought to address the nation's non-compliance with the budget development process and deadlines contained in the law. The emergency amendments to the law removed much of the details of the budget process, requirements, and deadlines, and instead provided that the treasurer shall develop the necessary guidelines and procedures, including the specific deadlines, for the nation's budget development process to be reviewed and approved by the business committee. The emergency amendments to the law became effective on May 12, 2021, and these emergency amendments were set to expire on November 12th. The Oneida Business Committee then extended these emergency amendments for an additional six-month period through the adoption of Resolution BC 1110-21B, so the emergency amendments to this law will now expire on March 12th, 2022. While the emergency amendments were being processed, the LOC was also working on the development of comprehensive amendments to be adopted on a permanent basis. So thus far, the LOC has held 23 work meetings to develop comprehensive amendments to the Budget Management Control Law. So during the development of the amendments to this law, the LOC collaborated with the nation's treasurer, chief financial officer, assistant chief financial officer, budget analyst, and strategic planner. On November 3rd, 2021, the LOC approved the initial draft of the proposed amendments to this law. So overall, the proposed amendments to the Budget Management Control Law will revise the name of the law from Budget Management Control Law to Budget and Finances Law, expand the purpose and policy of this law to address other financial policies and procedures of the nation beyond just the budget process, eliminate the strategic planning provisions from the law, instead providing simply that the Oneida Business Committee should develop and adopt a strategic plan broad goals or priorities for the nation that the budget shall reflect, clarify the authority and responsibilities of those individuals who play a part in the nation's budget process, simplify the budget process and procedure contained in the law in an effort to improve the nation's compliance with this law, and provide more flexibility to adjust the budget development and adoption procedure to meet the nation's current circumstances, and include new provisions which address unbudgeted expenditures, obligated future expenditures, capital contributions, grants, debt, employment and labor allocations, and unbudgeted positions. So on November 15th, the LOC updated the draft in the legislative analysis and improved the public comment period notice and forwarded the budget management and control law amendments to a public comment period to be held open until February 2nd, 2022. So typically the Legislative Procedures Act requires that the LOC hold a public meeting where people can come in person and provide comments on proposed legislation or ask questions, and then hold open a public comment period for an additional 5 business days where an individual may submit written comments or questions on the proposed legislation. Now, because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the nation's public health state of emergency, we have been unable to safely hold in-person public meetings. So Oneida Business Committee Resolution BC 12821B, updating public gathering guidelines during the public health state of emergency COVID-19, prohibits indoor public gatherings when the COVID-19 case activity rates, present positive rates, and the transmission rates within Brown or Outagamie counties exceed low, as identified by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. At this point in time, the nation has not yet met these thresholds for holding an indoor public meeting. So the nation's COVID-19 core decision-making team addressed the issue of not being able to hold public meetings through its March 27, 2020 declaration titled Suspension of Public Meetings Under the Legislative Procedures Act. So this declaration suspended the LPA's requirement to hold a public meeting during the public comment period, but still allows members of the community to participate in the legislative process by submitting written comments, questions, data, or input on proposed legislation to the LOC via email during the public comment period. So although an in-person public meeting was not held on the budget management and control law amendments, due to the requirements for holding an indoor public meeting not being met, a public comment period was still held open until February 2nd, 2022. So on February 16th, the LOC did accept the public comments that were received during the public comment period and reviewed and considered each comment. So on page 8 of your packet, you'll see the public comment review memorandum. This document serves as a tool the LOC used when they reviewed and considered the public comments that were received as required by the Legislative Procedures Act. So if you look at the memo, it's organized by topic. So immediately after the comment divider in bold, you'll see any relevant excerpt from the law. Then it is followed by a verbatim comment received, including the specifics of who made the comment and whether it was oral or written. Next, you'll see the response section, which is my attorney response to the LOC. Here is where I provide the LOC and the reader any relevant background information on the motivation or purpose of the law, any in-depth explanation of the provisions of the law, and any potential options for how to consider the comment. The last section under every comment is the LOC consideration. So this demonstrates the LOC's discussion and decision on how to address each comment. On page 29 of your packet, you'll see the draft of the proposed amendments to the budget management control law that was available during the public comment period. So this is the draft that all the public comments were referencing. So the first thing that we're going to ask the LOC to consider in regard to this topic is adopting a motion to accept the updated public comment review memorandum.
So moved.
Motion made by Jenny.
Second.
Seconded by Daniel. Questions or comments? If not, we're going to take a roll call vote because Kirby is now on. So we'll start with Jenny.
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel? Support. Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. Looking for a motion to approve the updated draft of legislative analysis?
Oop, not yet.
Oh, not yet. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So the LOC did receive a late submission of comments after the public comment period concluded. So although these comments were not formally included in the public comment review, the LOC did still review and consider these comments. The late submission of comments that were received can be found on page 40 of the packet. After review of all the submitted public comments, the LOC did hold additional work meetings and receive additional input from finance that resulted in revisions to the proposed amendments to the law. So on page 42 of your packet, you'll find a redline draft that demonstrates all the changes that are being proposed to the draft from the public meeting period draft of the law. So since the public comment period ended, the LOC has made the following revisions to the law. So on page 43 of the packet, line 74, a definition for the term enterprise was included. Then on line 76, the definition for executive manager was revised to remove stating the specific positions that qualify as executive managers and instead require that executive manager positions be identified through resolution. On page 44, line 90, the definition for fixed charge coverage ratio was revised and the specific calculation for determining this ratio was removed from the law. On line 99, a definition for government service was added. On line 106, the definition for secretary was revised to include their designee at their discretion. On page 49, line 205, the notification of budget increases section was revised, so now the Oneida Business Committee needs to be noticed of any fund unit whose budget increases or decreases over a certain percentage set by the treasurer. On page 47, line 222, the continuing budget resolution provision was revised to add more clarification as to how continuing budget resolutions are used. So this now limits the use of a continuing budget resolution to 3 months to avoid any potential audit issues and provides that the Oneida Business Committee may adopt the nation's budget if the General Tribal Council fails to or is unable to adopt the budget within the first quarter of the fiscal year. Then on lines 246 through 254, references to the procurement manual have been changed to the procurement rule handbook, and this handbook will once again be required to be developed in accordance with the administrative rulemaking law. On page 48, line 267, the section on approval of unbudgeted expenditures was revised so that the CFO is required to provide the business committee a written fiscal analysis and input on any potential unbudgeted expenditures, and the Oneida Business Committee then makes any approvals of unbudgeted expenditures through the adoption of a resolution. Then on line 282, the provision on obligated future expenditures was revised to clarify that this section of the law did not apply to approved multi-year contracts. On page 50, line 357, in the section on grant-funded positions, the language was clarified. Starting on line 368, the acquisition of debt section was modified so that any debt underwritten by the nation for less than $10 million is required to be noticed to the General Tribal Council, while any debt for $10 million or more requires GTC approval. On lines 380 through 388, regarding credit ratios, the specific ranges for acceptable credit ratios was removed from the law, and instead it references that specific financial institutions will set the acceptable ranges for low-risk debt financing options. On page 51, line 240, a provision was added to the unbudgeted position section, which provides that the CFO shall provide the Oneida Business Committee a written fiscal analysis and any input on the potential unbudgeted position. The Oneida Business Committee shall authorize the unbudgeted position through the adoption of a resolution. Finally, on page 53, line 496, it was clarified that only a list of fund units of elected entities, which did not comply with the budget schedule or guidelines, shall be included in the annual report to GTC. And I do want to note that during the LOC's prep meeting, there was discussion and conversation with Chief Counsel about making a potential revision to this draft. So the potential revision to this draft we would be looking at is on page 50, starting on line 368, regarding the acquisition of debt section. So there was discussion that this provision of the law should be revised to read as follows, and it would read, notice of the acquisition of debt. Any debt underwritten by the nation shall be noticed to the General Tribal Council at the next available meeting prior to the execution of the credit agreement encumbering all pledges of repayment. If an emergency circumstance exists, which prevents the notice of the acquisition of debt by the General Tribal Council, the Oneida Business Committee may approve the acquisition of debt. So, and then now that we've walked through the specific changes that have been made to the proposed draft on page 54 of your packet, you'll see a red line draft that demonstrates all the revisions to the law that are being proposed from the last permanent draft of the Budget Management Control Law, which was adopted under BC 2817C. Then on page 72, you'll find a clean draft of the proposed amendments to the law. So this is what the law would look like if the proposed amendments were adopted as is. Starting on page 84, there's an updated legislative analysis. So the legislative analysis is a plain language analysis describing the important features of the legislation being considered and the factual information to enable the LOC to make informed decisions regarding the legislation. So this legislative analysis summarizes the amendments to this law in plain English and then provides additional background information on the development of the amendments to this law and the legislative process, consultation and outreach, and how this law relates to existing legislation. The legislative analysis also discusses its effects on existing rights and protections and enforcement, as well as other considerations for the LOC to make. So now we have a final draft and final legislative analysis ready for approval by the LOC. So the second item we're asking the LOC to consider in regard to this legislative item is adopting a motion to approve the updated draft and legislative analysis with the noted change to section 121.8-2 of the law.
So moved.
Motion made by Jenny. Marie?
I have a discussion.
Yep, go ahead.
I have a question for Larry. Okay, so the loan history of the nation, what is the lowest amount of a loan that has been, that had to go to DTC for approval? Do you know offhand? I hate to put you on the spot.
No, not at all. Routinely, any material credit agreement has gone to the general membership for consideration and adoption by resolution. Going so far back as the Bank America credit facility, health center bonds, Anna John bonds, retail bonds, I should call them, and any other ancillary credit agreement. And really it's conjecture, what we feel, the authorities embedded in the Constitution is where the referent opinion from the auditors was offered, RSM. You know, we can always amend that, I think, with some productive dialogue with the membership. But that, from the bank's perspective, trumps any other authorities. I mentioned at the council informally. So what we think is important, we want flexibility. Typically, if it's under the scale of $10 million, we would incorporate that into our operating budget annually, given capacity. We did that with the gaming remodel of about $28 million, those of you who were on council, and then longitudinally paid that, if you will, project cost off with liquidity budgeted on an incremental basis over 3 years. You know, I'm not a constitutional attorney, but the bank's attorneys will get hung up on, and they routinely view the Constitution as the gold standard in terms of authorities. I'm not questioning the intent whatsoever. I'm not going to go there. We offered the fact that given RSM's opinion that unless it's explicitly waived by the membership, the bank's attorneys will acknowledge that capacity proprietarily. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is some of the tribes that preempted that and then had default had real problems in the workout. So I don't in any way judge right hand, left hand. What's relevant, and again, I mentioned this to council, is the bank willing to give us credit without the membership's hand going up to give consent? Maybe. On a scalable project, probably not, because they're gonna, in the question of default, there will be some diminishment of recovery of that economic exchange. Mm-hmm. They're gonna protect their interest, and they're gonna tell us, as they have years past, get your membership to vote on it, irrespective of what finance thinks. I will say, and I appreciate the scenarios to which we may have a foreboding to get credit expediently, we'll deal with that. The membership is not unreasonable. If we would have to do emergency meeting, referendum, whatever, we would address that with some expediency as a community. But I don't have a workaround to preempt the Constitution, because it's very explicit. RSM spoke to that. And I think more importantly, what is the thought from the banking community's perception? Onto which they meet with us routinely at NAFOA. And their perspective is this: when in doubt, we like to have a resolution from your general membership. Because if you ever default, all the recovery provisions have standing. So we don't get before a judge and arbitrator and, the credit agreement wasn't approved by your membership, so, gee, there's no recovery. The banks aren't going to expose the risk and their financial well-being and standing. The bankers, of course, are evaluated on their history of credit defaults. So they want recovery. They are going to protect their economic interests, not always at the expense of ours, but that as a fact set is why we've gone to the membership for authorization and approval by resolution, regardless of what finance thinks, regardless of what RSM thinks. The authorities are embedded in the Constitution, right or wrong. We've talked about amending the Constitution seemingly eternally. You know, I go back to the early 80s. We have an old constitution, so does our manifest country. We know it's not perfect. I don't have an easy answer as a workaround. I think we're gonna have continued dialogue. I don't think simply noticing GTC is gonna satisfy the banks. Again, regardless of what I think. You can speculate, well, we'll just send them a note. Yeah, we took off 50 million. Banks won't write the note. I can tell you most of their attorneys are going to cite our Constitution and the history of credit agreements throughout Indian country. Mm-hmm. Get your membership to approve the resolution. That will trump it all because they hold the cash. I don't mean to be, I guess, in any way judging the intent of the committee. We know we need to have capital. We know we need to have projects go forward. That, you know, but again, you know, the Constitution kind of comes back as a foundational document to limit our good intentions. So I don't have an easy answer for that other than put it on the agenda. You hope enough hands go up and we go forward together as a community. That's all we can do. And generally, they've been pretty good with us. I think we have a 1,000% batting average when we've gone to them with a good project. Most recently, the bonds for Anna John. And, of course, Jenny's grandma was there telling me find the money, so I did find the money. Or I should say I asked the GTC to find the money. When there's a good, credible project, they will support it. Mm-hmm. And then when there's a good, credible project we can fund by way of fiscal capacity in our budget, we will do it. The gaming remodel is, I think, a good specimen example of that. But it's all about what the banks think. Again, respectfully, it's not a consequence of what finance thinks. You got to have a willing creditor in the space that there's efficient debt. Now, can you get private equity and non-bank financing? Sure. But the rate acceleration pricing that risk that they don't have a clawback is always a consideration. We like conventional debt, simply the fact that it's more efficient from a rate standpoint. Hope that helped. I hope I didn't confuse you.
No,
and again, I'm not a constitutional scholar. I'm a bean counter finance guy, but we do live in the space of where the banks opine on these issues at NAFOA, so I know how they think, unfortunately. So, but thank you for listening to me.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I understand it. So my thought is that the word any. So if we had a loan for $100,000, which is like a drop in a bucket for considering our size of revenues, right? We would have to go to GTC to get that loan approved.
No, that would not be correct, Marie, respectfully. The 250 capacity stands by motion. I don't think the membership is in any way gonna judge those nominal dollar amounts. If we gotta buy laptops, it's net 30. Those are transactional, operational, budgeted decisions.
Okay.
It's where you have a scalable project.
Okay.
10 million, 50 million, 100 million. The gaming master plan's coming.
Yeah.
That certainly is going to have to encumber some consideration by way of the membership. But if we've got a small copier loan, or, you know, we buy a fleet of vehicles and we took a temporary lease on them, those are budgeted. Those are operational in nature. So we don't consider those, notwithstanding a membership approves certainly the financial instrument, our annual budget, to enable those operational decisions on a practical level.
The revision has any, so there is, it doesn't apply to any, is what I'm hearing him say, because some will be in operational budget if it's a loan. So I just feel like the word any makes me feel like I'm going to have to go for any one.
So maybe we can clear that up, Clarissa, if it could be labeled at $10 million instead of the word any. If that's the threshold that Larry had just said was 10 and above.
And that's kind of where we were at before the...
Correct.
What's that?
Okay, so what I'm hearing is changing section 121.8-2 so that it would read notice of the acquisition of debt. Any debt underwritten by the nation for $10 million or more shall be noticed to the General Tribal Council at the next available prior meeting prior to the execution of the credit agreement encumbering all pledges of repayment. If emergency circumstances exist which prevents the notice of the acquisition of debt to the General Tribal Council, the United Business Committee may approve the acquisition of debt.
I can agree to that. So Larry, do you concur with that $10 million? If we put
it... When you say concur, and I mention it respectfully, it's really not the incumbency of finance, it's this body, it's the willingness of the bank to underwrite that credit agreement.
Yeah, okay.
They are going to look at our Constitution and say, who fundamentally has the authority...
They're going to ask, who fundamentally has the authority as granted? And it's going to, as it has historically, default to the general membership. Again, I don't have a dog in this fight. The banks do, it's their money until they transact it and make the loan. But if I'm a loan officer consulting the in-house legal expert at the financial institution, invariably, if it's a loan of scale, they're going to want the membership's hands to go up. It's just the way the industry is.
Yeah.
Irrespective of our good intent here. I will say that years past, we did in our debt service budget, from a budgeting standpoint, again, going back to the scale of the gaming remodel, we carved out over 3 years, arguably $8-9 million in, if you will, contractor payments from the time we broke ground to the time we finished. Paid that out of our cash capacity. Given the scale of the organization, you know, if we've got a $10 million project there, if there's the want and it's approved at the expense of other operational expenses, that capacity is not troubling. And I would argue it's more efficient, purely from managing the balance sheet, to put that into the operating, I'll call it, budgeted element, as opposed to taking debt willingly. So you can debate that. Of course, there's no exactitude in financial science, but from a conservative standpoint, representing the interest of the membership and the business committee, less debt is a good thing. We found that out when COVID got here. Certainly the tribes that were levered up suffered disproportionately than those that did not. Fortunately, we did not have any debt. And again, we don't have an opinion. It's the willingness of the bank's attorneys to sign on. But to answer your question, I don't see the $10 million capacity in any way being diminished by, you know, the resources we've got to, you know, again, if we've got a 2-year project, $5 million, we routinely expedite CIP projects higher than that. So it's not like the LOC or the committee is going to be handcuffed, because if we've got a project that, like the nursing home, you're going to find a way. If it's a gaming remodel, you're going to find a way. And that's where we, in finance, accommodate the mutual interest to find either a fiscal process or using the balance sheet, liability side of the balance sheet, to get the project done. We'll still do that. And then view the membership as a resource, notwithstanding we're not having meetings now, which is, I think, coloring our thought process. But when it's to mutual good, they have supported the underwriting of debt routinely and without exception. So if they see value in it, they're going to support it.
And we're trying not to handcuff us at the BCBA.
Sure.
And we're also trying not to handcuff GTC as well.
Yeah, and that's not, Jenny, respectfully, in any way the intent of my comments.
No,
it's, again, I think the banks will handcuff us because they're going to protect their interest. I think that's the point of my comments, but thank you.
Okay, so if do you think that if we were in the pandemic and we needed $10 million or $11 million, how would we get GTCs? How, I mean, I think that the Constitution also gives BC authority, delegates authority in the Constitution. So that's the piece that I'm leaning on for some of this. Not all of it. I understand that GTC needs to be noticed for a substantial amount. But in my head, I'm trying to find the balance. What is the number where we can comfortably move forward and keep it? And I think it's $10 million. I don't know that it should be higher or lower. I just feel like we do have some authority that was, you know, given to us by GTC in order to make some of these decisions. So I'm not 100% sure.
Well, like Larry said before, that they did do the gaming remodel for $28 million, but they did it through time, correct? So it was budgeted, so we put it in the budget for 3 years mm-hmm. to have that debt paid off. So it really was no debt that was taken out. That was $28 million. So I think we're safe if we go with $10
million.
Okay. And we do have it listed in here under emergency situations where we can't meet because of COVID or maybe there's a bigger disaster. I don't know if we're at World War II. I don't know what's or World War III going on. Whatever it would be, any kind of disaster that the emergency allows the delegation from the business for the business committee to make that move if we can't meet. So.
Mr. Chairman, I also have concerns about the bank not, you know, issuing the approval of the loan because there is nothing in writing by our GTC.
Correct.
That's in back of my head, too. But I'm not going to, I think what you just described fits, I'm okay with that, too. I just don't want to be in a position where we can't get a loan. But for some reason, why, I just have a lot of questions around the approval process by the bank, but that's out of my control because we do have the Constitution that gives BC authority in some capacity.
Correct.
So I'm okay. I'll second the motion.
First, we got to go back to Jenny. Are you okay with the change that we did?
Yeah. Could you just read that one more time? Yes, please.
Okay, with that motion being made by Jenny. Looking for a second.
I'll second.
Seconded by Marie. Questions or comments? Kirby, I saw your hand up before. Do you still have a question or a comment?
Yeah, Maria answered some of those questions that I was thinking, but what I wanted to say was the CFO mentioned that in the Constitution it gives the GTC authority and that the bank would go back to the Constitution. But I also know in the Constitution, I believe it's Article 4, in the absence of GTC, business committee is delegated authority. So I didn't know if that covered it or not.
Thank you. Daniel?
Yeah, I'm okay with the current language. Just a comment for the future. I think it's reasonable as it is right now, and it works for the moment. Whatever time in the future, 10, 15, 20 years from now, that probably has to be, it'll revised or looked at again. It, $10 million might not be much at all after World War III. So.
Thank you, Daniel. Jenny?
Actually, I'd like to maybe have a review of this in, say, 3 years of the BMCA.
I would shorten it up probably, I'd say, within 1 year, because in case we just, after we get this approved, we roll it out for 1 year, let's just take a look at it again and see if everything's rolling good. If it's not, we can actually bring it back. I think that'd be a good compromise.
Uh-huh. That's something that we can include in the adopting resolution that okay. will do a one-year review.
Perfect.
Okay. All right, now we'll take a roll call vote. We'll start with Jenny.
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, so now moving on, that we have a final draft of the law. On page 104 of your packet, you'll find the fiscal impact statement request memo. So the Legislative Procedures Act requires that a fiscal impact statement be provided for all proposed legislation of the nation. So the fiscal impact statement is an estimate of the total fiscal year financial effects associated with the proposed legislation. And this should include startup costs, personnel, office costs, documentation costs, and an estimate of the amount of time necessary for an individual agency to comply with the law after implementation. So the fiscal impact statement must be completed and submitted to the LOC prior to the proposed legislation being forwarded to the business committee for consideration. The fiscal impact statement provides the business committee information on what the potential adoption of the proposed legislation will cost the nation so that the business committee can determine if adoption of the proposed legislation is in the best interest of the nation. So the Legislative Procedures Act grants the LOC the authority to direct the finance department or any agency who may administer a program if legislation is enacted or may have financial information concerning the subject matter of the legislation to submit a fiscal impact statement. So Oneida Business Committee Resolution BC 1028-20A, titled Further Interpretation of Fiscal Impact Statement in the Legislative Procedures Act, provides further clarification on the process for directing a fiscal impact statement to be completed. This resolution provides that upon final approval of draft legislation by the LOC may direct the Finance Department to provide a neutral and unbiased fiscal impact statement to the LOC within 10 business days for inclusion in adoption materials. So now that we have a final draft of the proposed amendments to the Budget Management Control Law, the Fiscal Impact Request Memo is a memo from the LOC to the Finance Department directing that a fiscal impact statement for the proposed amendments to the law be completed and provided to the LOC by March 31st, 2022. So we're looking for a motion from the LOC to approve the Fiscal Impact Statement request memorandum and forward to the Finance Department directing that a fiscal impact statement be prepared and submitted to the LOC by March 31st, 2022.
So move.
Okay.
Motion made by Marie, seconded by Jenny. Question for Larry, is March 31st an adequate date for that to be prepared in time?
Well, we always like some deferential, I'll call it time. I'm not saying we need 6 months, let alone 2 months, but given the magnitude of the changes, which we weren't aware some of these changes were gonna get baked in and redlined, we would like a little more time, frankly. And keep in mind, we're half the staff we were pre-COVID, so okay. There's only so much in the way of time for which we can devote to the analytics. The document's pretty lengthy. If it were a two-sheeter, we'd have it pounded out in a day, 2 days, but I would ask a couple more weeks, at least, maybe mid-April. I'm trying not to hold this thing up.
Okay, is that adequate, 2 more weeks, middle of April? Would that be okay with the LOC? Daniel?
When does the emergency expire?
It expires on May 12th.
Is that enough time in between there to get it approved?
The latest, I mean, if we had the fiscal impact statement by April 14th, then I could get the adoption materials for the law into the April 20th LOC meeting so that it could go to the April 27th BC meeting.
Would that work for you, Larry?
Sure, thank you.
All right, thank you. And then would you like to make that change, Marie, to the motion?
Yes, please.
And then Jenny?
Yes.
Noting that the fiscal analysis will be completed by April 14th, and that would be the deadline for us to get it turned in, get it passed, because it's an emergency amendment, and we don't want it to expire.
If you guys make that motion, I just want to point out that I will update the fiscal impact statement request memo so it reflects the new date.
Okay. All right. I think we're just adding it to the motion. Is everybody okay with that? Any opposition? Kirby, you okay with that?
Yes, I support.
Okay. All right, then we'll do a roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
And Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. Moving on to the wellness court law. Clarissa?
This item starts on page 106 of your packet. So the request for the LOC to develop and adopt a wellness court law was carried over from the last term and originally submitted on December 20th, 2017 from the Tribal Action Plan Laws and Policy Subcommittee. So on October 7th, 2020, the LOC added the wellness court law to its active files list. So since that time, the LOC has held 13 work meetings with a group of representatives from the United Nations Judiciary, the Oneida Police Department, the Tribal Action Plan, the Behavioral Health, the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, and the Legal Resource Center to work on the development of the law. So the Legislative Operating Committee also participated in a three-day Tribal Healing to Wellness Court Planning Initiative training presented by the National Association of Drug Court Professionals in November 2020. So the purpose of the Healing to Wellness Court law is to establish the nation's Healing to Wellness Court to offer intensive case management, treatment, and court supervision to individuals who committed an offense directly or indirectly related to a substance abuse or addiction issue, provide access to holistic, structured, and phased substance abuse treatment and rehabilitation services that incorporate culture and tradition, create intergovernmental and intragovernmental collaborative teams to interact with each participant, and encourage and support each participant in the goal of their recovery to lead lawful, productive lives free of substance abuse and addiction. It is the policy of the nation to bring together community healing resources with the nation's justice system to work collaboratively with intragovernmental and intergovernmental partnerships to reduce the abuse of alcohol and other drugs and drug-related criminal activity affecting the nation's community in an effort to promote lifelong substance abuse recovery and the reintegration of the participants into the Oneida community. So the Healing to Wellness Court law will establish the Healing to Wellness Court as a division of the trial court and delegate authority to that court. Delegate jurisdiction to the Healing to Wellness Court for matters related to substance abuse and addiction and any matter arising under this law. Delegate authority to the Healing to Wellness Court to collaborate and enter into intergovernmental agreements with courts of competent jurisdiction that exercise concurrent jurisdiction. Establish the Healing to Wellness Court team comprised of a trial court judge, court coordinator, Oneida Police Department officer, representative from probation, substance abuse treatment provider, representative of Oneida Culture and Heritage, and any other member as determined by the team, and provide how revisions to the composition of the Healing to Wellness Court team are made. The law will delegate authority to the Healing to Wellness Court to establish policies and procedures governing the operation and implementation of the Healing to Wellness Court program. It will provide that all Healing to Wellness Court meetings and hearings are closed to the public and held in accordance with the policies and procedures created by the court. And it will provide that the Healing to Wellness Court is a non-adversarial forum where the Oneida Judiciary Rules of Civil Procedure and Rules of Evidence do not apply. On February 16, 2022, the LOC approved the draft of the Healing to Wellness Court law and directed that a legislative analysis be developed. So the draft of the proposed Healing to Wellness Court law can be found on page 117 of your packet. The legislative analysis is found on page 109. So again, a legislative analysis summarizes the law in plain English and provides additional background information on the development of this law and the legislative process and how it relates to existing legislation. So we're now asking the LOC to consider the adoption of a motion to approve the legislative analysis of the Healing to Wellness Court law.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Jenny, seconded by Marie. Questions or comments? I see none, so we'll do a roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to the Elder Assistance Program Law, Clarissa.
This item starts on page 120 of your packet. So the request for the LOC to develop an Elder Assistance Program Law was brought forward by Councilman David Jordan based on a recommendation from the Chief Financial Officer during the October 20th, 2021 LOC meeting. So this request asked the LOC to consider developing a new law to establish an approved program under the United General Welfare Law, which transitions the nation's elderly 65 plus per capita payment distribution fund from being utilized for per capita payments for elders to being utilized for general welfare assistance payments for elders. So on November 3rd, 2021, the LOC added the Elder Assistance Program Law to its active files list. So since that time, the LOC has held 6 work meetings and has collaborated with representatives from the Oneida Law Office, the Trust Enrollments Department, and Finance to work on the development of this law. So the purpose of the Oneida Elder Assistance Law is to establish the Oneida Elder Assistance Program to govern how the nation provides financial assistance to elders pursuant to the principles of general welfare exclusion. It is the policy of the nation to prioritize the general welfare needs of its elders. The nation recognizes that its elders possess unique and irreplaceable stores of knowledge, skill, culture, and experience that enhance and enrich the lives of every member of the nation. The interests of the nation are advanced when its elders remain confident that their general welfare needs can be met. A draft of the proposed Oneida Elder Assistance Law can be found on page 6 of your packet. So the Oneida Elder Assistance Law will establish the Oneida Elder Assistance Program as an approved program of the nation in accordance with the Oneida General Welfare Law, provide how this program qualifies for general welfare exclusion, provide the eligibility requirements for accessing from the fund. So what that is a person has to be a member of the nation, age 65 or older, and submit a completed application during the designated submission timeframe. It provides the minimum requirements for information that must be included on the application. It provides how and when funds from the Elder Assistance Program will be disbursed. It provides for the types of expenses that shall be considered qualifying expenditures for use of assistance from the fund by the recipient. It provides information on the funding source and who determines that amount of available funding that will be available to an eligible participant. And it provides the department that has the responsibilities to administer the fund. So on March 2nd, 2022, the Legislative Operating Committee accepted the initial draft of the Elder Assistance Program Law and deferred it to a work meeting for further discussion based on additional input that was received from both the General Manager and the Trust Enrollment Department Director. So on March 10th, the LOC considered all that input that was received and made some updates to the law. So on page 122, you'll see draft 2 of the proposed Elder Assistance Program Law. So this is a redline draft that demonstrates all the changes the LOC has made since the last LOC meeting. So notable changes include the application period deadlines and disbursement dates were removed from the proposed law. And instead on page 123, line 70, the law provides that the Oneida Business Committee in consultation with the Oneida Trust Enrollment Committee shall set forth through the adoption of a resolution, an application submission period and disbursement timeframe for a distribution of assistance from the Elder Assistance Program. So this change was made to allow for more flexibility in determining when disbursements are made from this program. On line 86, the requirement that a description of need provided through options on the application be provided was removed, and the language was simplified so that a declaration from the recipient that their need exists is required, and this just reflects what has been done with the latest rounds of GWA payments that were processed by the nation. Then on page 125, line 141, the title of the fund was clarified to the Elder Education and General Welfare Trust Fund, while still providing the background information that this fund derived from the Immigrant NY Indian Claims Award Docket 75 Trust Fund. So that's a summary of the changes. So on page 126, you'll find a clean draft of the Elder Assistance Program Law. So now that we have an initial draft of this proposed law, the next step of the legislative process will be to direct that a legislative analysis be developed. And then I just want to point out that as we start thinking about working on the legislative analysis, discussion of the Elder Assistance Program law will be on the March agenda at the Joint Oneida Business Committee and Oneida Trust Enrollment Committee meeting. And this is on the agenda in an effort to garner input from those entities on this proposed law. So depending on those discussions, if there are any additional revisions to the law that are sought, an updated draft will be brought forward at that time. So today, I'm asking that the LOC consider the adoption of a motion to approve the updated draft of the Elder Assistance Program law and direct the that a legislative analysis be developed.
So moved.
Motion made by Marie, seconded by Jenny. Questions or comments? Jenny?
I do ask for a visual for our elders, something that we can put in the gullywee socks so that they're understanding that it's going from a per cap to a GWE. You know, just trying to explain that to Encore. What's the struggle? Oh. So,
a good word to use is convert.
Yes.
Converted from a per capita to a GWE. A. Okay, roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to Oneida Nation Gaming Ordinance amendments. Clarissa?
This item starts on page 130 of your packet. So the Oneida Nation Gaming Ordinance, often referred to as ONGO, regulates all gaming activities under the jurisdiction of the nation and is intended to govern the gaming activities of all persons, gaming employees, consultants, business entities, vendors, boards, committees, or commission, and hearing bodies. So on December 2nd, 2020, the LOC added ONGO to the active files list per a November 10th, 2020 directive from the business committee that it be added to address a concern raised by the Oneida Law Office over the placement of the Gaming Security Department within the nation's organizational structure under Section 501.9-2 of the law. So more specifically, the concern is that the placement of security under the police department has given rise to certain legal claims that could expose the nation to unnecessary litigation costs, regardless of merit or prevailing party, if not disposed of in an expeditious manner. So based on this concern, the LOC decided to bring forward emergency amendments to Section 501.9-2 of ONGO by temporarily reassigning security to the Oneida Business Committee for supervision while a more appropriate permanent placement is developed and vetted within the period of time allotted for emergency amendments to be in effect under the Legislative Procedures Act. So the emergency amendments to ONGO were adopted by the Business Committee through the adoption of Resolution BC 51221D. So these emergency amendments were set to expire on November 12, 2021. On November 10, 2021, the Business Committee adopted Resolution BC 111021A, which extended the emergency amendments to ONGO for an additional six-month period effective on November 12, 2021. So the Legislative Procedures Act allows the Business Committee to extend emergency amendments for a six-month period. A six-month extension of emergency amendments to ONGO was requested to provide additional time for the LOC to process the adoption of permanent amendments to ONGO. So the emergency amendments to ONGO will now expire on May 12, 2022. The Legislative Operating Committee is now processing the permanent adoption of amendments to ONGO. Since this item has been added to the active files list, the LOC has held 17 work meetings, some of which were held in collaboration with representatives from the Oneida Law Office, Oneida Police Department, Internal Security Department, Oneida Gaming Commission, Gaming Management, and the Oneida Police Commission. The proposed amendments to ONGO will remove the Security Department from under the supervision of the Oneida Police Department. Previously, Section 501.9-1 of ONGO provided that the Gaming Security Department is a department within the Oneida Police Department. So the proposed amendment to Section 501.9-1 of ONGO will remove this statement that Gaming Security is a department of the Oneida Police Department. So although ONGO will no longer provide that the Security Department is a department within the Police Department, with respect to the Police Department, ONGO will now provide that when investigations involve or uncover a possible criminal or quasi-criminal activity, the Gaming Security Department shall report the activity to the Oneida Police Department for further review and investigation by the Oneida Police Department under its separate departmental authority. So the requirement that all reports of Gaming Security Department must be copied to the United Gaming Commission, previously found in Section 501.9-1, was removed from Ongo due to concerns raised by the police department regarding confidentiality of ongoing investigations. So reference to the Oneida Police Department in Section 501.9-2 was also removed and replaced with the security director in regard to the responsibility to collaborate with the gaming general manager and the Oneida Gaming Commission to enter into an agreement subject to ratification by the Oneida Business Committee describing the responsibilities and reporting requirements under Gongo. So these proposed amendments will remove the legal risks associated with security's placement under the Oneida Police Department. The emergency amendments previously made through ONGO through resolutions 5-12-21D and BC-11-10-21A provided that the business committee shall be responsible for the supervision and oversight of the gaming security department and that the gaming security department shall report directly to the business committee per the process and schedule set by the business committee. So it is the intent of the legislative operating committee that the adopting resolution for these proposed amendments will include a provision that the Oneida Business Committee remain as the body responsible for the supervision and oversight of the security department until such a time as the Oneida Nation Law Enforcement Ordinance can be amended to expand and transition the Oneida Police Commission to a public safety commission, which will oversee the security department along with the Oneida Police Department, conservation wardens, and any other safety-focused department in the future. So additional non-material drafting and formatting changes has been made throughout the law to update the language and drafting style in ONGO to be consistent with the nation's current drafting practices. So starting on page 134, you'll find a redline draft of the proposed amendments to ONGO that demonstrate the changes from the last permanent version of the law, which was adopted through BC-9915A. On page 162, you will find the clean draft of the proposed amendments to ONGO. Now, since the emergency amendments to ONGO expire in May, we're working under an accelerated timeframe. So we have a couple steps of the legislative process ready for approval and consideration by the LOC. So in addition to the draft of the proposed amendments in the packet for your consideration by the LOC, we also have the legislative analysis for the proposed ONGO amendments, which start on page 189 of your packet. Then on page 195 of the packet, we have the public comment period notice. So we'll be ready to move on to the next step of the legislative process, which is where we collect public input on the proposed amendments to the law. So again, typically the Legislative Procedures Act requires the LOC to hold a public meeting in person and then hold open a public comment period. As I stated earlier, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we're not able to hold indoor public gathering meetings at this time because we have not met the threshold required by Business Committee Resolution 12821B. So although we will not hold a public meeting in person on the proposed ONGO amendments, a public comment period will still be held open until April 13th, 2022, in accordance with the Legislative Procedures Act as it's been modified by the suspension of public meetings under the Legislative Procedures Act declaration. So the public comment period notice found on page 195 will be published in the Gully Wee Sox and placed on their webpage. The whole public comment period packet, which will consist of the draft of the proposed amendments and the legislative analysis, as well as this public comment period notice, will also be placed online at the Oneida Register and electronically provided to all managers, directors, and supervisors of the nation. Again, the public comment period for the proposed ONGO amendments will be held open until Wednesday, April 13th, 2022. Written comments can be submitted to the Legislative Reference Office via email at loc@oneidanation.org. So today I'm asking the LOC to consider the adoption of a motion to approve the draft and legislative analysis of the amendments to ONGO and direct that a public comment period for the proposed ONGO amendments be held open until April 13th, 2022.
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Daniel, seconded by Marie. Questions or comments? See none, so roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. Okay, moving on to new submissions, the Oneida Nation Emergency Planning Committee bylaw amendments. Clarissa?
This item starts on page 196 of your packet. So on February 25th, 2022, the LOC received a request to add the Oneida Nation Emergency Planning Committee bylaws to the active files list for amendments by Kaylin Gresham, the Emergency Management Director. So Kaylin provided that due to the restructuring that has occurred within the nation, there are departments and divisions listed within the bylaws whose names have changed. Therefore, she is requesting amendments to these bylaws to update the names of the divisions and departments that have changed. So the agenda request form for this item can be found on page 196. This is followed by a copy of the current Oneida Nation Emergency Planning Committee bylaws on page 197. So the LOC needs to consider whether or not to add this request to the active files list. So I'm looking for the LOC to consider a motion to either add the Oneida Nation Emergency Planning Committee bylaw amendments to the active files list with an identified sponsor, or deny the request to add the Oneida Nation Emergency Planning Committee bylaw amendments to the active files list.
I would be the backup sponsor if everybody wants to add it to the active files list.
Marie?
Okay.
Isn't this law just on recently, or was it in 2021?
The bylaws were amended, I believe, last year. I'm not totally for sure on the date. And then there was a recent request recently that the LOC denied to add these bylaws back to the active files list. So it's up to the LOC if you'd like to add these bylaws to the active files list for this purpose. I did have discussion with Kaylin that there is the understanding that sometimes the name of departments change more frequently than laws change, and that at this point in time, although the bylaws are not updated, she could still send letters to the current departments and just explain, I understand in, you know, my bylaws it says this division, but you have now changed to be called X department, so I'm still asking you to participate. So she does know that there's a workaround for the right now, so I think what she was requesting was just, you know, clean it up officially.
Thank you, Clarissa.
I think it's a fairly easy fix. So I'll make a motion then to add it to the active files list with David as the sponsor.
Motion been made by Jenny.
Support Kirby.
Kirby makes a second. Questions or comments? If none, I'll do a roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Marie?
Support.
Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
Motion carries. That concludes our agenda for the day. Looking for a motion to adjourn at 10:14.
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Marie, seconded by Daniel. Roll call vote. Jenny?
Support.
Support.
Marie, Daniel?
Support.
Kirby?
Support.
All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
You are.
Thanks for your work.